And from Texas, of course, the greeting would be, Shalom, y'all. Now, of course, if we traveled across the world and went into different communities, different ethnic communities, different geographies, we'd hear all sorts of interesting greetings, wouldn't we? In Arabic, we'd probably hear something like, Assalamu alaikum, which is peace be on you. If we were in Portugal, we were speaking to some Portuguese people, since it's afternoon now, it would be Boa tarde. If we were in amongst the Xhosa people down in the southern part of Africa, and by the way, Xhosa is spelled X-H-O-S-A, and X is a... So amongst the Xhosa people, they would say, welcome, hello, how are you, would mean Namakelile Molweni Ninjani. So, you know, all these different sounds and cultures, when you start hearing all of them and seeing the differences in people's faces and heights and statures, it's fascinating to realize the diversity that God has created. He's created all this beautiful diversity. He loves diversity. Of course, we were all speaking one language at one point, weren't we, before Babel. And so he had to intervene and add, you know, the extra language on top of it to confuse us, to confuse the nations, because we were getting out of hand too fast at that point. And of course, part of the problem that human beings have had ever since, you know, Adam and on through his offspring, his immediate offspring, is people have tended to go their own way when it comes to true religion. So not only have you all these different cultures with all these different languages and all these different value systems, but you've got different religious beliefs laid on top of those many times over. And it's led to total confusion, has led to people just straying way off track, not knowing God's way of life. Many people never ever knowing that there is such a thing as Christianity. And those that know Christianity perhaps not even knowing true Christianity. And of course, as we know, again, if we take the long view back over history, things reached a pinnacle point just before the flood. And what do we read in the Bible? We read that Noah was a just man in all of his generations, and he was saved with his immediate family, and only they were saved. And essentially, we started over again after that. And his sons, Shem, Ham, Japheth, went out and populated the world. And then the whole cycle started again, didn't it? You had the Shemites kind of moving up into Europe. You had the people from Japheth moving out east. You had the Hamites moving down into Africa, developing their own cultures, developing their own religions, straying from God, the truth again being lost to just a small portion of humanity at any one point in time really understood the truth. And even as we are here today, brethren, such a tiny group, tiny compared with the percentage of the rest of humanity alive today that understands the real truth of God's way of life. It's amazing when you think about the whole of human history and God's amazing plan, and that He has a plan for every single human being. How can that be? His mind and His love is just so vast, so much more than our minds can even grasp. Now, of course, God the Father and Jesus Christ are in the process of assembling a team. They're assembling the dream team, the team that is going to take on the massive task of speaking to every single one of those billions and billions of people that have never, ever heard of God's truth. And we have that opportunity. Now, as we're in preparation to take that role, and we know that that role is going to be as a king or a priest, or king priests or priest kings, starting in the world tomorrow, but rolling on beyond that into the great white throne when all the billions will come in the second resurrection. How many times, brethren, do we stop and think about the training that we're receiving as members of that team that is going to accomplish that amazing work? How many times do we really think about, in our day-to-day struggles, in the trials that we go through, oh, why am I going through this trial? Oh, woe is me. How many times do we think to ourselves, you know, it's all good because God's teaching me something. He's busy teaching me something that I'm going to be able to use to teach others, to train others. It's so easy, isn't it, as a human being, just to get down and depressed about our trials. But if we just turn it around and look at the bright side of that, I think it can make quite a difference to our quality of life. So, let's go back to some of the final words that Jesus used when he was talking to his disciples. And he had them all together there in John 14. Let's have a look in John chapter 14. And during the course of this, we'll be looking at the first six verses, but right now we're just going to look at the first couple of those in that segment. And we will stop short and we'll examine verse 4, 5, and 6 in more depth a little bit later on in the sermon. So the first couple of verses there, John 14, it says, Jesus is addressing the disciples and he says, "Let not your heart be troubled." They knew it was time that his ministry was coming to an end, and all of the work that they'd been doing, all the camaraderie that they've built up was coming to an end, and he was going to be going. He'd been hinting at that and talking about that. And they were concerned, and he said, "Don't let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me." And then he says, "In my Father's house are many mansions or offices. If it were not so, I would have told you." And then he says something really significant. "I go to prepare a place for you. I go to prepare a place for you. I'm preparing this office for you. I'm preparing this mansion for you." What does that mean? What does it mean? He's preparing an office. He's preparing a place. Is he preparing a nice corner office in a building with a nice view, some nice furniture, a nice high back chair, nice telephone, nice carpet, you know, a little coffee machine in the corner? Is that what he's doing? He's preparing an office for us. No. What's he doing? "I'm preparing a place." That sounds like there's some planning going on. God has a great plan for every human being, and he's got a great plan for you and for me. Again, what is he doing? This is not a physical place that he's preparing. It's preparation. It's training for a role. He has a role. He's planned out what his team is going to look like. And we've all, you know, had experience with groups and teams and specific roles that people play in teams. There's specific skills and experiences that you look for in various roles within a team. So in this way, God is saying, "I'm preparing something for you. I've got in mind that you're going to be a king priest in this specific area, maybe this geographic area, maybe this specific group of cultures that you're going to be dealing with. Maybe this specific age group, Maybe it's these people with these types of backgrounds and experiences that I'm going to specifically get you to work with. And I'm going to give you the skills to work with those people. I'm preparing you for that office. I'm preparing you for an office. I have a specific role for you in mind. And everything that happens in your life between now and the time that I return and you are welcomed into my family, into the God family, everything is going to give you the opportunity to build the knowledge, the skills, and the experience so that when you are in that role, you'll have all the experience you need. You won't feel like, what do I do now? You won't have that feeling, that kind of emptiness in the pit of your stomach going, I don't know what to do. And you won't be going and, you know, stepping forward and putting your foot in it, you know, and messing up, because you will have had the experience and the training now. So when Jesus said, I'm going to prepare a place, he's going so that he can be there, right at the master controls of the universe, working with each one of us to help us to get prepared for our role. Now, think about training and development. Think about your own personal situation. So, you know, we've all been through schooling. You know, when we're little kids, we start, we go to school, we get older, we end up in high school, we maybe go to college, maybe university. Whatever your schooling background has been, it probably consists of, you know, gaining knowledge, so sort of theory, you know, reading stuff and learning stuff. But then at some point, you know, there was a switch in emphasis to also balancing the learning with practical stuff, putting into practice the things that you've learned. So opening a book and reading about how to do something is one thing, but then rolling up your sleeves and actually doing it and seeing, oh, okay, that's how that really works. The practical side is equally important. I mean, think about science subjects. So you read in a book about all sorts of fascinating things about science. And then what do? They say, okay, come, we're going to the lab. We're going to the science lab. And your eyes light up and you see all these things and these little Bunsen burners and all different concoctions that you can start throwing together. And hey, presto, you create an explosion in that science lab. And you say, oh, yeah, that's what they said in the book. That's what will happen. And perhaps, you know, at some point during the year, there's some tests that take place as well, where they say, okay, you've got the knowledge, you've had some of the experience, now we're going to test you. And you've got to write a test, or maybe you have to do a practical test. So education and learning is all about studying and doing and being tested. Well, isn't that what our Christian life is all about? Studying and then practically living Christianity every day of our lives. And then the third thing, testing. That's the one we're not that keen on, isn't it? Oh no, it's another test. But testing is a very important part of the learning process and of growing and of building the skills and the experience that we need so that when we get out there, once we've finished our schooling, we actually can use everything that we've learned. And it's the same from a Christianity perspective. So, brethren, when we get under the weather and depressed and down and struggling through trials, let's remember why it's happening. We're being tested so that we can hold those offices And those unique offices, each one of us is going to have a unique set of responsibilities. God's not trying to create a bunch of, you know, the same, you know, robotic type people to do the same robotic type tasks, because every single human being, all those billions that are going to come up, each one of them in turn is unique, has had a set of unique circumstances in their lives that they need answers for. And we're going through some of the trials and tests now and experiences now so that we can relate to them. We can say, I was there. I understand that. I had a similar situation happen. And here's what I did. Actually, instead of saying, here's what I did, here's what God intervened in my life to help me to achieve, to help me to overcome. That's what this Christian life is all about. It's not about fate. You know, it's not that God is sitting there with master kind of controls and pulling all these levers and kind of just directing us into various things. It's not about fate at all. But he is keen that, you know, if let's take me for example. Derek, if I'm gonna have Derek be a king priest for these types of people handling these types of situations, I need him to go through, let's say, these 10 specific experiences in life, and I need him to understand what my will is in each one of those things and how to change his life to become more like Jesus Christ so that he can help these other people. So now, as I live my life, he's going to make sure that I get through those 10 trials. And I'm using 10 as just an example here. I'm still a free moral agent. I'm going to make decisions. I'm going to take different turns. But he's going to kind of bring me back. As a lost sheep, he's going to bring me back and he's going to say, all right, now I need you to go through that experience right now. I mean, think of Jonah. God wanted Jonah to go and do something. Jonah ran away. He made a decision. God didn't at that stage, you know, grab him and just force him back. He let him run. And he kept on. Jonah, come on, I want you to do this. Jonah kept running. Jumps on a ship. Goes out to sea. Thinks he's escaped. God's still saying, Jonah, come on. He said, no, I can't hear you. Well, falls in the water. Well, gets thrown in the water, and the fish that God specifically prepares grabs him and throws him up, literally on the beach. He says, okay, now go. And now he has to go. So God will eventually get all of us to go through the experiences he wants us to go through. And it's not a fatalistic view at all. He wants to give us every opportunity to develop those specific character traits in our lives that he knows we will need to fulfill our role in the office that he is preparing for us. Well, brethren, have you ever thought about who you might be teaching when those billions of people come up? So now, as we are approaching the feast, and Denise and I are going to be down in South Africa for the feast. In fact, there on the map, you'll see the place Mossel Bay. That's where the feast in South Africa will be this year. And as we were busy thinking about Mossel Bay, and we started thinking about the history of Mossel Bay and how many people have died in that area and that will come up, you know, in the Great White Throne, we started thinking, wow, you know, who will these people be? And will we have an opportunity to speak to them? And the more we talked about it and thought about it, the more we started thinking, well, let's just take three people. Now, they're going to probably be a whole lot more, because remember, God says he's going to give us, you know, rule over a number of cities. You know, and that the parable talks about, you know, here are five cities that you're going to rule over, and here are 10 cities that you're going to rule over. So there's a lot more than three people in a city, I would imagine. But just for the sake of this process of thinking through what might be the scenario, let's take three possible people that we might meet down in that area. And in the process of doing this, perhaps you can start thinking about your own geography and your own history in the areas that you're in, and some of the people that you'll come into contact with, that God is building skills and experiences in you so that you'll be able to relate to them. So let's go through and have a look. And as we go through, let's imagine the three people that might be assigned to you. And we're going to use three people from the history of this particular area. And I'm going to have to go backwards and forwards a little bit. Sorry. So the first person comes from the group which is known as the Khoikhoi. Now, these were nomadic peoples that came down into this area, and they were essentially herdsmen. They looked after cattle. And they're the people that, you know, a lot of the languages in South Africa, the black peoples, their languages have clicks in them. I mentioned that when we started, the Xhosa people, they've got a click. There are basically three different types of clicks. There's an X, which is, there's a C, which is in the front of your mouth, and then there's a Q, which is a. So, but they've got all different combinations of those things, and the Khoikhoi is where all those clicks really came from, and they disseminated through the rest. So, please hit the next one. Yep. So this is the chief of the Khoikhoi. This man here, if you could hear it once more, please. His name was Kora. And he was one of the very first chiefs in that area. And so, you know, he's buried somewhere in that vicinity of the Cape. The next person that we're going to look at is one of the Portuguese sailors, one of the people that came across down past the Cape to try and discover the route to the east, to the spice route for trading. And this person, if we could have a look at his face, you see he's a Portuguese man, a well-to-do person, and his name is Bartholomew. So this is actually Bartholomew Dias. Bartholomew Dias is a famous navigator that came down into that area. And the third person that we're going to look at, he comes from the Malay community. Now, Malaysia and Indonesia, you know where that is? That's up in the east, kind of between, you know, India and China, you know, is that world. And they have a very large Muslim community there. And so the person that we're going to look at there is a leader. And his name is Ahmad. And so Ahmad was a leader in the community, in the Malay community. He was a holy man, basically, in the Muslim community. Now, let me tell you a little bit more about these three people. So we have Kora, the chief of the Khoikhoi. The Khoikhoi tribe, the name Khoikhoi means men of men and the true people. So they prided themselves. There was a lot of pride that we are the true people. We, above all the other black tribes around here, we're the main guys. So there was tribe, there was power and pride there. Now, Kora broke away from the main tribe. And he created the tribe called the Korana. The Korana. So named after, of course, him. Right? So you can see there's a theme here of pride, isn't there? Starting to emerge. So he was argumentative and he had all sorts of quarrels with the other leaders of the Khoikhoi. Quarrels over water and grazing rights, quarrels over the ownership of livestock or women or all sorts of issues. And this caused division. So he created some division. And he went off and formed his own sub-tribe. Now, what happened afterwards was that tribe itself then fractured again. So you had the great Qurana and the little Qurana. And each of these, in turn, broke into splinter groups that divided until there were many groups whose names have been slowly forgotten over time, and they were not even recorded. And they have disappeared. So, think about this. You are now the king priest who is looking after Korah. Korah is standing in front of you. And you have to teach him. And you know this about his history. The question is, what skills and experience have you had? Has God worked with you to show you your pride? Has God put you through experiences where you've seen the ugly side of pride? Has God put you through situations where you've seen organizations or groups splinter? Does that sound familiar to any of us in this room? Have we seen situations where splinter groups splintered further and splintered further and eventually fizzled out? Can we identify with Korah? We probably can. We probably can in a lot of areas. We'll be able to show him that, you know what? After you died, Korah, you know, it was just the great Qurana and the little Qurana. They splintered again. And they splintered again. And they splintered again. And guess what? They disappeared. Because of an independent spirit, a prideful spirit, and that's something that all human beings have, and something we all have to work on to fix that. And God is the one who will help us to do that. We take Bartholomew Dias. He was a squire of the royal court of Portugal, a superintendent of the royal warehouse, and the sailing master of the man of war São Cristóvão, which is St. Christopher in English. So this ship that he sailed, we know very little about him, only that his early life, he was married, he had two children, and we know he died at the age of 50. So he was 50 years old when he died. And we know that the king of Portugal, King John, the second of Portugal, had appointed him to go and find this trade route. And having rounded the Cape of Good Hope in 1487, at considerable distance to the south of Africa, he knew he had to turn round, and he took the winds out of the west and southwest that blow strongly in the South Atlantic, and he sailed up into the northeast. And after 30 days without seeing land, he landed at Mossel Bay, that site where the feast is going to be. He landed at Mossel Bay, and he, with his men, they got off the ship. They hadn't seen land for 30 days. They were dying of thirst. They had no water. So they found a spring. They started replenishing their water supplies. But then what happened was the local koi koi came out and saw them. And think about this. This was the first time the koi koi had seen anyone who wasn't black. They see these white people, they don't know what they are. They see the ship, they don't know what that is. What do? They start pelting them with rocks, and shouting and screaming at them, and Bartholomew Dias and his men have to turn tail, take the water with them, and charge back onto their boats. So that was a very short-lived excursion onto land. Now, let's just imagine. Was Korah there, maybe hiding in the bushes, checking these people out and then sending his people down? Maybe. Who knows? It might have been him that ordered that. Now you're standing as the king priest, and you've got Korah, and now you've got Bartholomew. You say, Korah, meet Bartholomew. And Korah says, I recognize you. You, that guy that came off the ship. And Bartholomew says, I recognize you too. You're the guy that was throwing rocks at me. We had some kind of animosity between us. That animosity is going to have to be resolved, because this is a new world order. This is a world order in which Jesus Christ and God the Father have specified a way for us to live. And it's the way of love. And there's no more throwing rocks at each other. There's no more war. There's no more hatred of someone who's different from us. Brethren, if you are talking to Bartholomew and to Korah about that situation and starting to teach them about God's way of life, will you have had the experience? Have you ever felt animosity towards another human being? Have you ever been on the receiving end of animosity from another human being? Have you ever resolved those issues? Have you ever followed the instructions that God gives us for resolving relationship problems? Have you ever gone to your brother and healed a relationship? God's giving you an opportunity now to do that, so that when you see Korah and Bartholomew, you'll be able to say, you know what? I had an animosity situation between me and a brother in the church. And God told me in His scriptures, He trained me, gave me the knowledge, and then I had to do the practical thing. I had to go and actually do what He told me to do, and I had to solve the problem. And guess what? With His help, it worked. And I know it's going to work for you, Korah, and you, Bartholomew. Because I've had the experience of doing it. You know, brethren, on that particular point, so often we run away, don't we? So often we don't follow through with those types of things. And that's a shame, because God's giving us the opportunity to learn so that we can teach. So that is a little bit about Bartholomew, of course, and his background. Now, the Muslims, thinking about Ahmad here, can imagine this time of history, starting in 1654, the year 1654, the Dutch were colonizing the whole Indonesia, Malaysia, East India area. And they had the Dutch East India Company. And of course, there were people, local people in the population, that resisted the Dutch influence in those areas, the Dutch rulership of those territories, the local peoples. And so a lot of the Muslim religious leaders actually opposed the Dutch presence there. And they were inciting the population to rebel against the Dutch. And of course, when the Dutch figured out who they would go in and take them in as prisoners and send them off in exile to the Cape province, to southern Africa. And so a lot of these Dutch ships that passed off the shore of Mossel Bay were on their way to Cape Town carrying Muslim religious leaders. Now, in this particular person's situation, he was on board a ship going past Mossel Bay towards Cape Town, and he died on the ship. They brought him to shore in Mossel Bay, and they buried him right there. So he's in a grave right there. Now, you're standing and you're talking to Korah and Bartholomew, and Ahmad walks up You say, oh, yeah, Ahmad, yeah, I've been expecting you, and I'm your king priest, and I'm going to be working with you. And I understand that you died on a ship just out there, and you'd been taken as a political prisoner, into exile. And I understand you had something against the Dutch people. Yeah, well, you know, turns out in my life I had a lot of problems with the Dutch people. And I've had to learn to figure out my attitude and to change my attitude towards them. One of the opportunities I had was to marry a woman who was kind of Dutch. And she helped me to figure out, you know, a little bit more about that culture, and I grew to love them. And I'm sure you will too, Ahmad. I'm sure you will too. And one of the key things you're going to have to do is to forgive. You're going to have to forgive. And you have to figure out what was driving your anger as well, because you were full of anger. And you know what? I've had to battle anger in my life too. But with God's help, I was able to do it, and I can help you. We can talk through this. You will be successful, and you will have a much happier life. All three of you, Cora, Bartholomew, Ahmad, I'm telling you, follow God's way. Follow God's way, because it leads to real peace and happiness, far more than any of us would ever be able to achieve on our own. And let's face it, none of you achieved the happiness that you wanted to have in your lives. Sure, you might have had some happiness, but it wasn't all there, was it? Well, one of the first things we'll have to do for these people is to train them in the true religion. So we'll have to remember we were talking about, you know, book learning and then the practical. So the book learning side is going to have to be pretty substantial, because these people will come to us with all sorts of, you know, different religions. I mean, if we take these people that we're talking about now, Cora, Bartholomew, and Ahmad, you know, the Khoikhoi, Cora, their religious mythology gives special significance to the moon. So there's the moon god. But they also really talk about a main god that is the origin of life, and the origin of health and happiness, and that he resides in the heavens above the stars. And they talk about his opposite. Gaunab is the name that's given to this individual, which literally means the destroyer. Now, isn't that interesting? It's, you know, Satan was also called a lot of names, some of which talk about destroyer. So they see a god of good and a god of evil in the Khoikhoi religion. So in some ways, you know, he's already got that concept, but we'll have to show him that it's not the moon, that God actually created the moon, and God created the whole of creation, and you shouldn't be worshiping the creation. So there'll be some work to be done there for sure. Bartholomew, of course, coming from Portugal, and at that time it's Catholic. It's a Catholic country, so he was through and through a Catholic. Now, you know, it's not necessarily going to be that much easier to to talk to a Catholic than it is to a Khoikhoi in terms of training them in God's truth, God's true religion. You will have to teach them that actually the Saint Peter that they're thinking that they have in their lineage was not Peter the Apostle. It was actually Simon Magus, the magician. And there's a whole bunch of wrong concepts in the Catholic religion that'll have to be sorted through as well. And then, of course, the Muslims, you know, they teach that there's only one God, Allah, and that Muhammad is the messenger of God. And they claim that the Quran is the original version of God's message that was brought through Adam, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and it's the final and unaltered revelation of God. So we'll have to say, actually, this is. The Quran is not. And we'll have to train them and show them how, you know, so that it'll start with a lot of, you know, book learning as well that we'll have to give them. Now, fortunately, we'll probably be able to speak all the same language, because I think God's going to kind of do the reverse of the Tower of Babel so that we can immediately start talking to people and they'll understand us. They won't have to start by learning a whole language. There'll be a way that we can communicate immediately. But once we've gotten through some of the basics related to true religion, then it's going to come down to practical. What must we do? How do we put what we've learned into practice? And this is where, again, it's going to come back to us. What are the experiences we've had? What are the things we've done in our lives? How have we applied God's way? How have we been tested to see that we're doing things God's way of life? Have you ever wondered, brethren, where would you start? Put yourself in the situation. You're sitting there with your version of Korah, Bartholomew, and Ahmad in front of you. You're sitting together, the four of you, and you're going to start teaching them practical Christian living. Where do you start? Well, you know, there's a great verse in Micah. If we turn to Micah, the book of Micah, chapter 6 and verse 8, and it actually uses these words to paint the picture of what God wants from us. It says, "What does the Lord require of you?" And that's essentially the question we can lead off with our three friends here. We can say, what does the Lord require of you? Now that you understand true religion, what does he require? What do you have to do in your life? And the beautiful thing about this scripture right here is that it really condenses it down to three very simple, straightforward concepts. Three simple, straightforward concepts. It says, what are the three things, or what does the Lord require of you? And it says, in verse 8, it says, to do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. That's what the Lord requires of you. So, let's ask ourselves the question, how are we individually doing in those three areas today? Are we grabbing every opportunity we have to build the experience in Christian living today in those three areas? Justice, mercy, humility. Are they ever present in our everyday lives, in how we behave? Can we see that happening in our lives? Can we see ourselves improving in each of those areas? Because all the experiences we gain in doing that now are experiences that will help us to teach Korah, Bartholomew, and Ahmad. Let's take them one at a time. To act justly, or to do justly. You could turn that into a question, couldn't you? You could say, are you practicing God's law? That's essentially what it's saying here. Are you practicing God's law? Because justice is, where does it come from? How do you know what justice is? It's the law. It's living God's law, to do justly. Now we know in Genesis 6 and verse 9, we can turn there, Genesis 6 and verse 9. We know that Noah was a just man. perfect in all his generations. And Noah walked with God. So being just is something that is a constant thing. Genesis 6 and verse 9, Noah was a just man and he walked with God. So we are learning to walk with God. And we'll be teaching them to walk with God. You know, in 2 Samuel 23, verse 1 to 4, it says, "These are the last words of David, the son of Jesse, the man that was raised up on high and appointed the God of Jacob, the sweet psalmist of Israel." These are his words. "The Spirit of the Lord spoke by me, and his word was on my tongue. The God of Israel, the rock of Israel, spoke to me." And what did he say? What did God say to David? He said, "He who rules over men must be just, ruling in the fear of God." He must be just. So this is the importance that God puts on being just. If you're going to be a ruler, each one of the men that we referred to just earlier, all of them were rulers. Korah was a ruler of his tribe. Ptolemy was a ruler of his ship. Ahmad was a ruler in a religious sense. But they missed the true understanding of what justice was. The result of being just and ruling in the fear of God, and if you fear God, you're obeying him, you're obeying his commandments. The result is, "He shall be like a light in the morning when the sun rises, a morning without clouds, like the tender grass springing out of the earth by clear shining after rain." In Colossians 4 and verse 1, it says, "Masters, give your bondservant that which is just and fair, knowing that you also have a master in heaven." So treating people justly according to how the commandments teach us is what this first aspect of being just, doing justice, doing justly is all about. Ezekiel 18 also talks about just, a man of who is doing justice. It says in Ezekiel 18, verse 4 to 9, "Behold, all souls are mine. The soul of the father and the son is mine. The soul who sins shall die. But if a man is just and does what is lawful and right, if he is not eaten on the mountains or lifted up his eyes to idols in the house of Israel or defiled his neighbor's wife or approached a woman during her impurity, if he has not oppressed anyone, if he has restored to the debtor his pledge, has robbed no one by violence, has given his bread to the hungry and covered the naked with clothing, if he has not exacted usury or taken any increase but has withdrawn his hand from iniquity and executed true judgment between man and man, if he's walked in my statutes and kept my judgments faithfully," what? "He is just." So you think about the Ten Commandments and you think about the last six commands, all about how do you relate to people? How do you interact with people? And we know each of those can be elaborated on dramatically. So, Ahmad, Bartholomew and Korah, learn and do those last six commands. Learn and do them. Fear God's commands. Build relationships with human beings based on those commands. Be just in the way you treat others. Because the last sentence of this segment here in Ezekiel 18, and in verse 9, it talks about
he shall surely live, says the Lord God.
And you want to live, right, Ahmad? You want to live, right, Bartholomew? You want to live, right, Cora? The just, of course, shall live by faith as well, faith in God, because we can't do it on our own. But moving to the second point, so the first one was do justly. The second one is to love mercy. Love mercy, be merciful. And the question here you could ask yourself, are you extending grace to others? Are you extending grace to others? You know, mercy and grace are so tightly intertwined, aren't they? I heard a great definition from someone the other day, and I wrote it down. He said, grace is when you receive something you don't deserve. So, unmerited pardon. Grace is when you receive something you don't deserve. Mercy is when you don't receive something you do deserve. So you deserve the death penalty, but you don't get it. And he summed it up by saying, I deserve death and I didn't get it. I didn't deserve pardon and I got it. That was grace and mercy together. Now, we are to be merciful. The good shepherd doesn't let the lost sheep go. Chases after the lost sheep. Forgives the sins of the lost sheep. Brings the lost sheep back. This is something I'm sure all of us have experienced over and over in our lives in terms of God's mercy to us. Especially when we come to understand His way and come to understand who we are and how we've really messed up in our lives, and yet He's been so merciful. Now the opportunity is to extend that mercy to others. How are we doing in our lives, brethren, in terms of extending mercy? How are we doing in terms of forgiving others? Reaching out a hand to help when someone who's done something terrible possibly to us or our family, but still reaching out a hand to them and saying, here, let me help you, when they're in trouble. Praying for them. Because that's what we're going to have to teach Ahmad and Bartholomew and Cora. We're going to say, Bartholomew, you're going to have to forgive Cora for throwing stones at you and chasing you away. Ahmad, you're going to have to forgive the Dutch people. Because that's the way that Jesus wants us to live. That's how He lived. That's the way that He demonstrated for us. Matthew 6, verse 14 to 15. Matthew 6, verse 14 to 15. For if you forgive men their trespass, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if you forgive not, neither will your Father forgive you. These are the lessons we're going to need to teach. And these are the experiences now that God is teaching us so that we will have first-hand experience and skills to teach those that stand up, especially in the second resurrection. The third one is to walk humbly with our God. Now, down in that area of Mossel Bay, if you go out at night, you look up and you see that sky. That's a photo that's taken down in the Southern Cape region, looking up at the Milky Way at night. Some absolutely gorgeous, gorgeous star-studded skies that you can see down there. So as the sun's going down, and we've had our first day of talking to Ahmad and Cora and Bartholomew, we say, I want to show you something. And because we're spirit being at that stage, we can grab hold of them and just whisk them up to the top of the mountain and put them down on top and say, look up there, look at the stars. And we can say, what is man that you are mindful of him? What is man? Look in Psalms 8 and verse 3 to 4. We'll be able to just quote this to them and we'll say, when I consider your heavens and the work of your fingers and the moon and the stars. And by the way, Korah, the moon, you thought it was a god? No, it's not a god. It's just a star. Well, it's not just a star. It's a body that's been created out there. When I look at all these beautiful things up in the heaven that you have ordained, what is man that you're mindful of him, and the son of man that you visit him? And then you can turn to them one at a time and you can say to them, Korah, who are you? And he might say, well, I'm Korah. I'm the chief of the Khoi Khoi. And I had a couple of sub-clans that I went off and created, the Korana. And you look at him and you smile and you say, Korah, who are you? That's the wrong answer you gave me. Who are you? And he looks at you puzzled and he says, well, you know, I had about 12 wives and I had about, you know, I'm a father of many kids and I'm a husband of many wives. And he looks back at you and you say, Korah, not the right answer. Korah, who are you? Look up at the sky. Look at, who are you? Oh, suddenly dawns on him. I'm a human being. I'm a sinner. But I'm also a child of God. I also have an amazing future. All that pride I used to have, thinking that I was the chief, we were people of people, we were the real people, yeah, well, not so much anymore. I'm just a human being. And we'll be able to turn to Bartholomew as well. So, Bartholomew, who are you? Well, I'm a great explorer. I discovered this whole area that we're in here. No. Who are you, Bartholomew? Who are you? Well, I'm a father and a husband. I had two kids. I had a wife. No. Who are you? I'm a sinner. And I'm a child of God. And I have an amazing opportunity. And he has a wonderful plan for me. Yeah. Ahmad, who are you? I'm a great holy man of the Muslims. No, who are you? I'm a religious prisoner. No, Ahmad, who are you? I'm a sinner. I'm a human being. But I'm a child of God. And I have an amazing future ahead of me. Brethren, that's the kind of experiences that we're going through in our own lives, isn't it? God has to get us to a point in our own lives where he asks us, put your name in it. I'll just put my name in it for now. Derek, who are you? And I give an answer, and it's the wrong answer. Ultimately, we get to the right answer, don't we, in our lives? You know, age and experience, we eventually get to the point where we realize, you know, all of that stuff that I thought I was, I'm not. All I am is I'm just a human being. I'm a sinner. But God has great plans for me. And I'm a child of God. That's what we're going to be teaching those people. That's who we're going to be teaching those people. It's an amazing future that we have in front of us, brethren. Absolutely amazing. And we'll be teaching them those three things. We'll teach them about living justly, loving mercy, and being humble, walking with our God. And, you know, it goes really full circle back to When Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you. You know, in John 14. In John 14, the second half of that passage from verse 1 to 6, just paraphrasing it now. After he'd said that, he said, Thomas asks him a question. Thomas says, but we don't know where you're going, and we don't know the way. And Jesus smiles at him and says, I am the way. I'm the way, Thomas. And I'm going to my Father, and I'm going to prepare a place for you. Follow me. Follow my example. I've come to this earth. I've lived my life. It's been documented for you how a Christian should live. Practical Christianity. There's a lot of knowledge to be gained here. But there's practice. You're going to be doing things in your life. You're going to live like a Christian should, like a true Christian should. And I'm preparing an office for you. I'm preparing a role for you that you're going to be able to step into and perform effectively, because you're going to live a life that's going to equip you for that. I am your high priest. I am your king. And you will be kings and priests in the world tomorrow if you follow me.